We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The McNeil and Perkins Show.
I was listening to the McNeil and Perkins Show.
Afternoons on the Score.
What is that you've got written on your helmet?
Born to kill, sir.
You write born to kill on your helmet and you wear a peace button. What's that supposed to be, some kind of sick joke?
No, sir.
What is it supposed to mean?
I don't know, sir.
You don't know very much, do you?
No, sir.
You better get your head and your ass wired together or I will take a giant on you.
Yes, sir.
Now answer my question or you'll be standing tall before the man.
I think I was trying to suggest something about the duality of man, sir.
The what?
The duality of man, the Jungian thing, sir.
Whose side are you on, son?
Our side, sir.
Don't you love your country?
Yes, sir.
Then how about getting with the program? Why don't you jump on the team and come on in for the big win?
Yes, sir.
Son, all I've ever asked of my Marines is for them to obey my orders as they would the word of God. We are here to help the Vietnamese because inside every there is an American trying to get out. It's a hardball world, son. We've got to try to keep our heads until this peace craze blows over.
Aye, aye, sir.
The McNeil and Perkins Show. Afternoons on the Score.
We are delighted you're with us on this now sunny Friday afternoon, Memorial Day weekend in Chicago. Perkins has the day off. I'm Dan McNeil. Mark Grody, our teammate, kind enough to sit in. We're on the air until 6 tonight, and with Memorial Day weekend, we thought it would be a good time with no sports going on as well to stretch our legs and talk a little bit. Yeah, we get to it, Meech. Talk a little bit about war pictures. And when I talk movies with Michael Phillips, the film critic from the Tribune, I am always exhilarated because he has such a passion for his craft. And often we agree. So he's a very smart film goer and writer. And he joins us right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is located in Melrose Park. Good afternoon, Michael. Thanks for the time. How are you feeling today?
Good, Dan, Mark. Nice to be with you guys.
We appreciate the time. I want to know, before I get your medal stand of favorite war movies of all time, why a couple pictures I consider to be war films are not on. I've been looking at lists all day of the best 10 war movies all day, and I can't find anyone who will consider The Imitation Game with Benedict Cumberbatch from 5 years ago, or The Pianist with Adrian Brody, because they are events in those films that are peripheral to the war but very much related to the war. Do you consider those to be war pictures?
Beautifully put. Why are you even wasting your time with me? I mean, that was an excellent point. I think you got wartime. The distinction, I suppose, is wartime films and then actual combat battle setting war films. And those are, you know, big distinctions in a way. And I think in a lot of ways, people neglect the wartime picture because of the natural kind of idea that you lean toward what's actually in the heat of battle. You know what I mean? And I think that's, especially around Memorial Day, I think it's ridiculous not to look at the wider context in a movie like, I mean, look, one of my favorites is The Best Years of Our Lives, and that there's not a single second of combat in that, except every minute of it, because of these three guys who are coming home from World War II, and fighting their own battles in every direction for 3 hours. And that film remains just hugely moving to me. And that's the kind of film I want to see on Memorial Day as much as any other kind of, quote, you know, exciting war picture, unquote.
And the antithesis of that then would be Saving Private Ryan, at least to me, where the battle and the realism at that point took it to what I thought was another level. To watch that felt devastating and graphic and scary. Has there ever been a war movie that did it better than Saving Private Ryan in terms of bringing you what maybe they were feeling when they invaded that beach?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first 15 minutes is some of the toughest, most graphic recreation we've ever seen, especially in an American film, especially by kind of an A-list director like Spielberg, who went that far that early in a picture just to sober people up right away, like, okay, we're not going to sugarcoat this. I like that film. I don't really love that film, I got to say. Maybe it's the kind of thing I don't revisit all that often for reasons, because it's not an easy film. But in another way, I wonder if it, from my taste, if it isn't a little easy toward the end, when it becomes a kind of a more traditional, conventional Hollywood version of events. And kind of a triumphal happy ending. Even this is before you get to the epilogue, you know, the modern day epilogue. I don't know. I remember talking about that film with my dad, who's, you know, like a lot of my family, you know, a veteran, and he didn't serve in a war, but he was in the Army for a long time, and, you know, went through West Point, and, you know, I got veterans of every war and on both sides of the family, practically. My dad did not fight, but he had no taste for the end of Saving Private Ryan. And other people I know who came out of that military background was more like, you're descending in the cavalry for a happy ending. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that audiences probably felt like they deserved or needed after that harsh, really rough opening of Saving Private Ryan, but to me they belong to two different movies. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I absolutely understand that. No question about it. Were you rooting for 1917 to win this year's Oscar?
No. To me, that was like video gaming your way through a movie. I didn't really like it. I really didn't. And it's too bad, because I think it's a great. It's great core material, and I think World War One has given us some of the great, truly greatest war films. If you look at All Quiet on the Western Front, if you look at Paths of Glory, another Kubrick film, along with what we just heard from Full Metal Jacket, right? Kubrick's Paths of Glory is, I think, the great World War One picture. I think 1917 is pretty minor compared to those two. And when I say a movie shouldn't be, a war movie shouldn't be that much, quote, fun, unquote. I think the problem with 1917 is that it's really just like you're gaming your way to the next level of kind of a thin story. And I'm not saying it's dull, and I'm not saying it's poorly made. I'm just saying it's not my kind of war picture, especially around this time of year.
I didn't care for any characters until very late. They didn't make me hurt for anybody until very, very late. And then they changed who our main character was 20 minutes in, too. Somebody's wiped out.
Yeah, it's a little, right. I mean, I guess the counter argument would be, you know, it's a panoramic picture. It's not really meant to get you too close or really behind the eyes of everybody. It's really more about just recreating this blur, this frenzy of experience under fire for the audience, which, again, that's a different kind of objective. I don't necessarily, you know, share it. I mean, I there's a lot of movies this time of year that I find myself recommending around Memorial Day or Veterans Day, like something like The Steel Helmet, a Korean war film by Sam Fuller. Terrific. Very few people know it now. And that's just that's a really small, efficient, vivid picture. And I don't know, sometimes it's those smaller ones that do get you closer to the characters on screen. Even something like Lone Survivor. Did you see the Mark Wahlberg film, Lone Survivor?
Yes, I did.
That's one of the better pictures, I think, that came out of the whole Iraq War and Afghanistan conflict cycle. You know, not on the more kind of on the A-list end, I do think that the two Kathryn Bigelow films that come to mind, Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty, are pretty damn good. And to me, they both give you the exactly that down the middle, relatively apolitical line of like, okay, this is not a polemic. It's not for the lefty audiences or the right wing audiences. It's really just about, you know, what was it like? And you can kind of debate policy and context, you know, amongst yourselves later. And sometimes I think that's the way to go. Black Hawk Down to me was like that too, Ridley Scott's film. That's a really immersive, exciting, but sort of in the right way, disturbing, exciting, not just fun, exciting war film where it just, you know, puts you through hell and does make you question things like the, you know, the mission itself and the tactics, but in a really kind of a higher level way for me.
I love Zero Dark Thirty too. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, it shows everything in modern day warfare and the obviously the killing of Osama bin Laden and the torture and just what everybody went through then. I thought that was wonderful. But a little bit of a switch here now to there have been many war movies made centered on the Vietnam War. Is there one that stands out to you as being better than the others, or did you like that genre of, because it's its whole own genre, it feels like, of the Vietnam movies.
And it really got going about 10 years after, well, when did it get going? I mean, they really got going in the late 70s, you know,
Apocalypse
and
that was, now, yeah.
Well, it was even before that, though, I would say, if you look at the timeline, it's more like the Coming Home and the Deer Hunter the same year, 78, I think. And I got to say, as gripped as I was by both those films at the time, you know, and I was pretty young, but old enough to be into film pretty heavy, I don't really know if The Deer Hunter or Coming Home are really lasting masterpieces. I don't. I think it's because of what we just talked about the polemic thing. I think, for me, it's hard not to be just gripped by The Deer Hunter's most, you know, kind of visceral scenes, even though they're historically totally full of shit, actually. But, but I find that the Deer Hunter is playing to the peanut gallery on the right, and I find that Coming Home is sort of a sop to the left. And I'm not sure if, no matter how much good acting there is in both those films, I don't know if those in 10, 20, 30 years are going to stand up with Paths of Glory, Best Years of Our Lives. I don't know. What about for you guys?
I am a Saving Private Ryan guy. I call Platoon my favorite war picture.
That's really good.
Yeah, and it's one I watch over and over. It's not my favorite genre by a long shot, but Michael, I'm a film guy. I'm a film guy who is pissed off that the television industry has been kicking film in the ass for a long time now.
I know.
So to avoid watching comic books, I go to see war movies because they are continuing to make them in mass.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, and we're going to get two more coming up. I mean, who knows how they're going to be, but this Tom Hanks film, the submarine film, 742, Greyhound, that's coming up soon. Spike Lee's film, Defy Bloods, is coming up, and that's a Vietnam picture. Again, very different kinds of films. We'll see them both, I think, in June. And, you know, there's no, as you said at the top, If you can expand your idea of what a war film is to talk about, every kind of a wartime story there is to tell, that's many, many years of 20th century history, let alone the other centuries. And, you know, you can learn a lot from all of them. I mean, you can learn a lot just by looking at a movie that's internally really divided, really good stuff up against less good stuff, like Glory, Civil War film. Mm-hmm. Every time Denzel Washington and Morgan Freeman get to tell their story, which is, you know, the meat of that story is about the black regiment. I mean, that's the truth. And then, you know, you have to kind of just settle for the less interesting story of how Matthew Broderick became a man. You know, I mean, that's a film that's internally as divided as the damn nation was in 19, in 1861. And, you know, I still recommend it because of the scenes with Washington and Freeman. I mean, that's where the story is. But that's also, that film's a real indication of how Hollywood makes these movies sometimes. They had to get what they thought was a bankable actor in the front, in the middle of what is essentially a, quote, black, unquote, story. And, of course, that actor was white.
In the name of expanding the view of what a war movie is, and one that had a comic twist to it, Inglourious Basterds. Did you like Inglourious Basterds?
Yeah, that's the most serious of all. But I mean, you know, it's fun to see Hitler go down. There's films that they don't all look. I mean, if you really want to talk about black comedy that means something to me personally, I mean, I go back to Altman's MASH. I go back to, my God knows, I go back to Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove, which is technically, right, a war film. You know, I mean, and I think even in a realm like The Great Escape, 63, Steve McQueen. I mean, that's a fairly, would you say, unserious war picture. It's more just like a really engaging adventure that happens to be based a little bit on truth. And it's just kind of endlessly entertaining. And it's also got the greatest damn musical theme ever written, practically. You know, that, I mean, just for the march, I pay $12.50, you know. But
takes you the weekend to watch it, though, Michael.
What's that?
It'll take you the weekend to watch it.
Yeah, right. It's long. It's a longish film. I think it runs as long as The War did. I think it's actually got a 4 or 5 year running time. But that film is what it is. You can't look at a movie like The Great Escape, or God knows, Inglourious Basterds, or any of those, and expect it or want it to be a serious, sobering, you know, docudrama. It's up to other things, you know. I guess another film I really think that people have never given a shot at is one of my favorite Eastwood films, Letters from Iwo Jima. Did you ever see that?
I've not seen that one. No,
I've not. No.
You know, it's dealing with the Iwo Jima story from the Japanese side, and it's, you know, he made it as a kind of a companion piece to Flags of Our Fathers, which is a pretty amazing venture when you think about it. Those two films made almost in tandem, and neither one of them very big box office performers, which is interesting with Eastwood because he knows how to make a hugely popular war film. He did it with American Sniper, but you know, I find more to really chew on with those Iwo Jima films, especially Letters from Iwo Jima. That's where I think he's really dealing with the cost of it all. And I guess, honestly, the older I get, guys, I don't know how much I have in me to kind of just enjoy a hell of a lot of recreational killing on screen. So that kind of war film has to be done really, really well for me to kind of just get into it, you know. And so, I mean, I don't know. Am I just becoming kind of a humorless old man? Is that the problem?
I don't think that. I think we get mellow. We want to feel good, right? The older you get, you want to be sort of be caressed by a film. Give me the human condition.
Kind of, although I guess, I don't know, man. I might work the other way. I mean, I think if a film doesn't sort of make you eat it a little bit, if it's a war film, I'm not sure I buy it, but, on the other hand, when I think of what MASH meant to me, you know, when I was 13, and kind of still does. I mean, that's a Korean War film that clearly is actually a Vietnam War film because it was made during the Vietnam War. But and nobody's haircut, Elliot Gould's hair did not exist in the Korean War. I'm sorry, but that's very 70s hair. But I mean, that film still. I mean, talk about an influential war film. That film just set the template for a whole style of black comedy and dealing with, you know, more carnage than people said. There happened to be operating room carnage, but more carnage than people had ever seen in a war film up to that point. And it just happened to be in the context of this crazy black comedy that, you know, still, I mean, we're all a little familiar with it now, especially thanks to the endless reruns of the series version. But, you know, that if you go back to the movie, that's a pretty tough minded picture. And in its way, it does remind you that, you know, this is serious business.
Michael, one of our, Go ahead, Dan.
Hey. No, you go ahead. You go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say one of our texters mentioned Good Morning Vietnam, but I think of that as way too much. That was like the Robin Williams show. I mean, it was a war movie. I don't think of it as a war movie. I think of it as Robin Williams being funny on a PA system, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of, I haven't seen that. You know, I never saw that after I saw it when it came out back in, what, 87 or so?
That sounds good.
And
right,
I remember, man. Yeah, I remember enjoying it a lot, but never seeing it again. And I just wonder if the semi-improvised scenes with Williams at the mic on air were kind of the whole movie. And the rest of it just seemed a little more of a fraud to me. You know what I mean? Even though it's based on a real guy. But yeah, I don't know. Look, we haven't talked about Apocalypse Now, which I do think, even though I think, I still don't think the ending works. But, you know, I'm only the 9 millionth guy to say that. But that film is staggering to me. To me, that film, of that group you're talking about, of Vietnam Pictures, Deer Hunter, Coming Home, everything else made in that sort of late 70s, early 80s cycle, Apocalypse Now, the best scenes in that, well, no one's ever made them before or since. And I think that is a film that gets, you know, there's enough black comedy right up against really, really harsh stuff. I think the first two-thirds, three-quarters of that film is just amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And Brando, too. Just terrific. Michael, always enjoy catching up. Thank you so much for giving us some time today. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend, man.
Thank you. You too, guys. Be well, and we'll talk again.
You bet. Yeah. Take care. That's Michael Phillips, the longtime film critic for the Chicago Tribune, who he and I agree on a lot of things. He is pretty tough on those war movies. He's a guy who likes to laugh a lot, and he likes the human condition film typically, but it sure didn't sound like war pictures are among his favorite genres, although his knowledge of it is just incredible. That is a student of film right there, Grody.
Dude, he referred to 1917 as a video game. I mean, that's pretty amazing, considering the love it received in the cinema. Can you imagine the cinematographer hearing that? Look at this you know, well-respected critic. So that's kind of like a video game, what that movie was like. And I kind of get what he's saying, because you're right down in there, and it's just the whole movie is kind of moving through mazes. You know, I mean, I don't agree with him, but I get what he's saying. I also agree with a couple of our texters who said that his voice sounds exactly like Terry Bores. He sounds like Terry Bores.
I saw a bunch of people texting that. I do not hear Terry when I hear Michael Phillips. Because Michael has seen the movies he hates. Terry hates a movie before he sees it.
You know, and Michael, like Terry, like one of the great thing, I don't know if it's a great thing about Terry, but one of his tricks was, I always thought Terry had great usage of the words damn and hell. Did anybody use damn and hell more or better than Terry Bores? And we heard a lot of that. We heard one word that we're not supposed to hear from Michael as well. So that was good.
Yeah. Bring that up. Mark Grody in for Danny Parkins today.
I want to take this time to apologize for some of the language, but nonetheless, our sincerest apologies to you, the listeners.
Kevin Harlan. I wonder if he's seen a war movie. You think Kevin Harlan's ever watched him? I bet he hasn't.
And no, I bet he didn't have time.
Yeah, I bet his little brother, Brian, has. I think Brian Harlan, former Bears PR director, super agent, my agent, you know, he's got John Harbaugh. You got a lot of big shooters. I'm a nuisance
McNeil
to him. Huh. Yeah, I'm in the nuisance category these days. But I think he's seen three movies in his life. And, Tanny, you'll be happy to know Goodfellas and Casino are two of them.
Of course. I mean, yeah. You gotta.
I think the third would be Blow. Which is there's a theme here growing somehow, some way. I can't imagine what that would be, but just a theme. All right, next up, we're going to play a little game a little bit. Some of you have been missing baseball. A little bit later on, before we get to the top of the last hour of the show, we will play a game I'm calling Love Me Two Times, and we will pit showmate against showmate against showmate against showmate. Or if you guys want to play as teams, we can go that route as well. I only have six questions, but a lot of people are missing baseball, so some fun baseball trivia on the angle of two. Love Me Two Times later on, top of the 5 o'clock hour, our best of from the week, which will include former White Sox outfielder Scott Podsednik, Antoine Walker, Mount Carmel's very own, who played in the NBA for a long, long time, was terrific with us on Tuesday. Craig Elo from yesterday's show, a little Steve Stone for you. Don't go anywhere. It's McNeil with Grody sitting in for Danny on The Score. Glad you're with us on this Friday afternoon. Happy Memorial Day weekend, everybody. I'm Dan McNeil. Danny Parkins will be back with me Tuesday. We all have a long weekend. Mark Grody, nice enough to sit in again today, as he did yesterday. Grody, I understand we have got to get to a phone call from earlier today on The Score on the Lawrence Holmes show. Apparently, Lawrence was doing a segment on things you can do to get yourself injured when you're old. Boy, I could write a book on that, but did you happen to catch? This is going to be a first time through for me. I was busy in food prep today, and I was rocking, so I didn't. I was being disloyal. I hate to do that, but I was.
I heard it live, and I was caught laughing out loud in the aisles of my Bockwinkel's grocery store, and it is really funny. It is really funny.
Let's give it a rip.
Doug's out in Fairbury. Hey, Doug, you're on The Score.
Hey, Lawrence. Well,
how are you, Doug?
This happened about 20 years ago. Since then, I've had a new knee. But I live by the river, and since you live by a river, you have a lot of animals. I was overrun with possums one year, tearing up my garden, my yard. They ended up in my attic. They breed twice a year. I had a mother possum and her babies up in the attic. I finally caught them. I took them down by the river. I was drop kicking them into the river, and I missed and blew out my knee. 20 years later, I have a new knee.
Wait. Don't hang up yet.
Okay.
You were out here drop kicking possums?
They were tearing up my yard, my garden. They were breeding all over the place. They breed twice a year. I live by the river, and I was so frustrated. I took them down the river and started drop kicking them, and I missed one and blew my knee out and missed a bunch of work.
Oh, I appreciate the phone call. I shouldn't be laughing at this animal abuse, but I do now have the mental picture of him living in a van down by the river and just deciding that he's going to drop kick possums.
That is a crazy way to hurt yourself, but my God, we reap what we sow, don't we? Doug the possum killer.
I had a mother possum and her babies. I was drop kicking them into the river.
Wait, I'm going to save you, but I am going to drop kick you when I send you home. You know, Dan, whenever somebody starts a story the way he did with, well, here's what happened, and it's the casual nature with which he's, well, had these possum. And
Doug's out in Fairbury. Hey, Doug, you're on The Score.
Hey, Lawrence. Well,
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 that's danger, man. Oh, when you hear, good. Well, what here, you? I'm about to tell you something that you may not want to hear. Well,
I had a mother possum and her babies. I was drop kicking them into the river.
Why didn't he just let them go in the river? Why did he have to drop kick them in the river?
Well, it sounds like he was punishing them for eating up the goat. I'm going to save you, but you're going to get the front end of my boot, too.
Now yes. Tell the others what I done did to you.
Roy Dan Mercer.
Oh, God. That's
the sincerity. It's the sincerity in his voice, the realism. Like that. It wasn't like a, oh, man, it was crazy. And then I dropped. It was, well, I drop kicked them.
I had a mother possum and her babies. I was drop kicking them into the river.
That's what we do.
Anybody who's ever blown out an ACL, I've done it twice, both knees, and I also have an artificial knee. Anybody who's ever had that happen to him knows exactly what it feels like when he describes how the knee goes. The knee is not a very good joint. The knee has to – that is a very, very awkward socket. It's not the worst joint in the human body, but when you if you twist wrong or suddenly, it's very similar to just rupturing an Achilles. That thing can just go like that, and you know it immediately. You hear it, and you feel it tear.
Do you think, Dan, that it was karma for him? Because yes. That is like a form of animal abuse right there.
Yeah, and I understand. You know, I ran into a possum not long ago.
They're not pretty. They're really not pretty.
Oh, God, I didn't. I pulled into the driveway around 9 o'clock at night, probably 4 or 5 months ago, and there I see it, you know, how when your headlights hit an animal and the eyes kind of reflect back at you.
Yeah,
In the yard, just about 20 yards past the front of the driveway. And I'm like, what in the hell is that? Because, you know, I've had moles in the yard, and you try to get rid of moles. I hate to do it, but I do poison them because they tear up your yard. But it was a possum, and it was pregnant. It was enormous, and I got close enough to get some really cool video on my phone of the thing as it waddles off just like pig. It was kind of cool.
There you go.
Anyway, it's a great film. It really is.
We have a ton of wildlife in our backyard. We got a lot of trees, a lot of room out there, and so we have a lot of rabbits and all kinds. We have a family of blue jays. There are hawks here all the time. Not black hawks, but hawks.
That didn't take long.
Yeah, and we nicknamed our possum JoJo Possum because we had just seen JoJo Rabbit a few days before we saw the possum. I know that's kind of silly.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. Right?
That's really interesting.
I was, a few years back, I was attacked, like viciously attacked by a bird. That apparently this bird, I had come in too close of contact with this bird and the baby bird, but this bird is up in a tree. I'm just walking out to a field where there's a football game going on, and I was just relentlessly attacked by, and he was going for my head and my face, and this bird wouldn't stop. So I now do not go near either birds or any animals. And
I've got a parakeet here.
Yeah, Robert does have a parakeet.
What kind of a bird was it, Grody?
I don't know. I think
Was it a regular small bird, like a sparrow? It was.
It was like a blackbird of some sort, but it wasn't a crow, necessarily. It was more of a blackbird than a crow.
I got Parkins with me all over again. He can tell the difference between a blackbird and a crow, the crow being the larger of the pair.
So it's a spider more than it is a snake.
Yeah, but he just kept coming at me, man. And I was like, well, I think I'm going to take you on down to the river and give you a drop kicking if this keeps up.
Drop kicking.
I had a mother possum and her babies. I was drop kicking them into the river.
Of course you were.
As soon as Doug felt his knee buckle, he fell to the ground and knew immediately he had surgery ahead of him. That's how it is. That's how obvious it is to you when you blow out the ACL. And he probably said, why in the hell did I decide I had to punish them too? Because they were bugging me. They were in the attic. Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, now next time they're in the attic, he won't be that humane. She'll just get out the old shotgun and take them out right there as opposed to torturing them by the river.
Possum. Would they be possi? The plural?
A possum?
Well, I'm saying just the plural. They basically are the same thing. There is a slight differentiation between an opossum and a possum, and I don't remember it was. I looked it up when we found JoJo Possum in the yard 5 months ago, and I didn't retain it. But, yeah. But they're harmless.
They're just
ugly. Don't carry disease, typically. They're not destructive. They're large and weird-looking, and you want to get rid of them, but there's no real reason to punish them or drop kick them in the river or in the street or anywhere else.
Right. If it was like a family of rabbits, do you think you would have been drop kicking them into the field? I don't think so.
A couple of texters have said something other than what my experience has been with possums or possi, if that's the – a couple guys have said they're kind of vicious. Not here in Indiana. Another guy says they do carry rabies.
The rabies, I've heard that, because like growing up in the western suburbs, we had raccoons, and we had possums too. We had them all. I mean, but if they had, Dan, I would think it's just when they have offspring around that any animal becomes vicious and overly protective, like this blackbird that attacked me. Like it was just, he thought I was messing with his offspring, and he took a crack at me.
I'm glad he did. Maybe it was a she. Maybe it was a she. You're a bird.
Probably was
Brody.
A she. Yeah. It was probably a she. Yeah.
Missing baseball. We're going to play a little game that will get you thinking about baseball. You can play along at home. First couple of them are bunnies, man. Just 2-foot putts. That's all they are coming out of the gate here. McNeil with Grody sitting in for Parkins. Going to get you a little baseball flavor in just a second on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Do you like games, little man? Let's play a game.
I'm making time. I've got a wife. I'm making time. I've got a wife. Oh, yeah!
Welcome back, everybody. It's Mac with Grody sitting in for Parkins. Tanny's back at the shop. Shep is at his abode in Arlington Heights. And time to play a little Love Me Two Times, a little baseball to whet your appetite for the season that will begin sometime in this year. Grody, I've got 6 questions here. I'm going to give each of the 3 of you 2 of them. These are accomplishments that somebody has done twice or has 2 different. They all wind up with the same thing. Something has happened twice. Sometimes there are doubles. So you could call it a 2-for-2 Tuesday twice if you wanted to, even though it's a Friday. Does it make any sense to you? Am I describing it okay? You follow where I'm going here?
Absolutely. You know what I usually say in these cases? Just play the game and see what happens.
Let's play the
game.
There
you go, Grody.
Yeah. All right, Grody, here is your first question. This is an entry-level question because I like for people who are driving or listening as they're out in the backyard getting the grill going for the afternoon or whatever. I like them to feel like they can knock a few in, too, every now and again. So this one is not going to challenge you too much, I don't suspect. But, Grody, this one is for you. Both of his historic accomplishments came on the south side. The first in May of 06, the second in July of 09. Who is the man who authored those 2 historic accomplishments?
Mark Burley?
It is indeed Mark Burley. Way to go.
Right, you're right.
You're right. Big Cat knows it. Tanny, this one's for you. During the 2009 season, the Cubs retired jersey number 31 for which 2 players?
Fergie Jenkins and Greg Maddux.
Very nicely done. Yes. All right, Shep, it's your turn. We move on now to a higher level because Nick doesn't play those entry-level games. He's the champion of trivia here as we see if he can love us 2 times. Here you go, Shep. Who is the last guy to win back-to-back American League home run championships? Who is
Miguel
the last
guy?
Quickly, he fires an answer, and it is wrong!
Nope.
Oh, man. I'll give you the years. 10 and 11. Who did it in 10 and 11?
Josh Hamilton?
Jose Bautista! No.
There we go. He's swinging faster.
Yes, that's what it was. I'm surprised, Shep. You let me down there. I thought for sure. Take your time, kid. Digest the question. Grody, he's trying to impress everybody with the speed with which he responds, I have a feeling.
Well, after watching him or hearing him demolish Les that one time, I was intimidated, but now I feel like I got a chance.
I think Shep is now finally realizing for the first time in his life that once you have a child, there are certain things that they don't have room in your brain anymore. And home run kings, like, that's for the first thing to go. So sorry, buddy. Shep, you're right here with me on that one.
Damn it.
That's awesome. I wouldn't have known the answer to it either. All right, Mark Grody, here is yours. Love Me Two Times, question number 4. 2 National League pitchers recently won back-to-back Cy Young Awards. 2 National League pitchers recently won back-to-back Cy Young Awards. I want both of them.
Max Scherzer and, oh, God. Should be pretty easy.
guy.
Take it easy
good.
Over there. Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Grody.
Scherzer and Kershaw nope. is the answer. No. That's not the answer?
No. Actually, Kershaw won in 13 and 14. But and there was a year where there was somebody else. Jacob DeGrom of the Mets is the
really?
Answer we are looking for. Yeah.
Shep, would you have gotten that one?
I would have gotten it. The Grominator. All right.
Tanny, here we go. Frank Robinson remains the only player in baseball history to win the MVP in both leagues. He did it in 61 and again in 66. For which teams did he play?
Oh, the Senators and the Orioles?
I'm sorry. Punch the button on yourself.
Nope.
Not going
you
to play.
Stupid.
Help
Orioles
him out,
and
Shep.
Reds there, Chris Tannehill.
Yeah, it's the Orioles and the Reds. All right, Shep. Though, don't let me down now. This is expert level. I put both of your questions at expert level. Love me two times. Before leaving Chicago to enjoy World Series fame with both the Athletics and the Yankees, Cubs left-hander Kenny Holtzman fired two no-hitters. Which were the two teams Holtzman authored no-nos against?
Oh, man.
It's before interleague play, so there's a hint for you. Yeah.
What's that?
It's before interleague play, so I'd go National League as guesses if you're guessing on these.
Yes.
I thought you would know one of them. I thought you would know his first because it's rather famous because somebody made a catch out in the well in left field off of a certain home run champion.
Bum of the week.
I can't believe it. He is not even humoring
the
me with
Pirates?
Guesses. No, Pirates are not one of them.
Nope.
Wrong. Atlanta, Hank Aaron hit a ball deep in the well that they say the wind blew back and Billy Williams caught it. He no-hit the Braves in 69, and I think he got the Reds in 70 or 71, might have been 72. Doesn't matter, but it was in Cincinnati, and that is how we love you two times. Love me two times, Grody. You know this song was banned on American radio in most cities?
They had a couple of songs that were, come on, come on, come on, come on, baby. Bleep me, baby, right?
What? I don't remember that. Bleep me? Yes. That's what. No.
What did I just say?
Great song.
Oh, no. Never mind. He said on, like, the Ed Sullivan show, like, he said.
He said on the Ed Sullivan show, "Girl, we couldn't get much higher." They wanted him to change the lyric on that because they thought it glorified drug use, and he refused to change the lyric. No, it was banned on American airplay because it promoted sex. It was a story about a soldier going off to war, and he wants to love his woman two times before he goes to defend his country and potentially never return home. That's Love Me Two Times, but everybody thought it was dirty in the late 60s, so they said, you can't play this on your little radio station. Don't do that. Don't play that.
Why didn't they explain to them what you just explained to all of us?
I don't know. I wasn't there. Somebody should have. I don't know if it would have worked. I would assume the suits in the 60s were even rougher than they are here in the 21st century when it came to radio execs, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I would guess so. We got an hour to go. Next hour, you're going to hear some of our best stuff from the week. It will include former White Sox World Series hero Scott Podsednik. We got Steve Stone on board, Antoine Walker. Stick around. It's McNeil with Grody sitting in on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I'm making time. I've got a wife.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.